Becky Stratton is from Marlton, New Jersey. She attended the University of Tennessee here in Knoxville, where she earned a BS in forestry with a concentration in forest resource management and a minor in wildlife and fisheries science, as well as an MS in forestry with a minor in statistics, investigating the effects of long-term prescribed fire on forest stand dynamics, small mammal populations, and habitat demographics. Throughout her BS and MS, she worked with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in fire management. She is studying under Drs. Wayne Clutterbuck and Nicole LeBay, and her research is investigating the relationship between fire intensity and duration on cell depth and stem and fine roots of hardwoods, changes in available soil nutrients, and tree uptake of nutrients as a result of fire, and the effects of fire on wood physical, chemical, and mechanical properties. Her presentation today is a lecture on the influences of spatial scale and firing technique as they relate to vegetation dynamics in prescribed fire management on public and private lands.
Thanks, Amy. I'd like to thank Sharon for getting the food here today and Dr. Belli for providing the funds for the food. Let's see, since Amy gave me an introduction, I'm not going to tell you what it is again. I'm going to start with a quick fire history in the U.S. and how fire management has changed since European settlement and focus on current management today. Then I'm going to go into firing techniques and practices and in prescribed fire management and how they are implemented on public and private lands. Then I'll discuss a little bit about how spatial scale affects how management practices are implemented on public and private lands, and how the effects of spatial scale alter fire behavior. And then I will discuss vegetation responses as a result of spatial scale and firing technique, and a little bit about the future of fire management. prior to European settlement, fire was prevalent across the landscape by both natural and anthropogenic means. Natural lightning fires burned for days to months on in a mosaic pattern, and fire intensity increased and decreased depending on weather conditions. And Native Americans also played an important role in shaping the landscape with their use of fire for land clearing and for hunting. Fire regimes changed pretty dramatically once Europeans had come and settled. We had with European settlement came the disease which decimated the Native American populations, and the extensive burning that the Native Americans were doing was then ceased, allowing the forest to grow uninhabited. By the late 1700s, most of the lands had been cleared due to subsistence farming, and then by the Industrial Revolution, much of the farming had decreased, and fields had gone fallow and reverted back to forest. By the early 1900s, an era of heavy logging and coupled with grazing and heavy burning provided the basis for today's forest. And by the mid-1940s, the Smoky Bear Campaign had been introduced by the state and federal governments and introduced a policy on total wildland fire suppression, which changed ecosystems. The lack of fire in ecosystems. Ooh, hey there. You're not supposed to do that. Oh, crap. You were. I'm not sure. There we go. Lack of fire in these ecosystems alter the structure and the fire regime, changing the habitat for fire. Ecosystems were once vast open woodlands, prairies, and savannas, with early successional fire-tolerant species. and in the understory, and these species maintained the vertical and horizontal continuity that allowed for frequent fire. Many of these ecosystems became adapted to the frequent fire, and the species in these ecosystems adapted specialized characteristics such as thick bark for protection from heat, root and stump sprouting, serotonous cones, and self-pruning. Land uses shifted between public and private lands. Western public lands have seen a decrease in timber and an increase in fire suppression, making most of these lands highly susceptible to catastrophic fire due to heavy fuel loadings and low fuel moistures. Lack of fire in the east has led to closed canopy forests that are primarily made up of fire-intolerant species that tend to have low fuel moisture or very high fuel moistures when their leaves accumulate in the litter and duff layers. The average number of acres owned by landowners between 1993 and 2003 has decreased because we've had an increase in overall almost a million landowners, which has reduced the total acreage owned by landowners from about 42 acres per landowner to 38 acres per landowner. We've also seen an increase in interest in ecosystem restoration, particularly pirate systems. This has been very feasible to do on public lands because they usually have very large acreages, a large, ample workforce and equipment, and plenty of funds to implement fire management plans. However, private lands usually lack the resources and have a lot more limitations, so it's much more difficult for them to practice fire management. There are two types of fire management, fire suppression and prescribed burning. Fire suppression is the primary means of fire management, and it has been on the increase because of the excess of fuels that have built up due to previous years of fire suppression. And there has been an increase in cost and acres burned annually due to this buildup of fuels. A few of the federal agencies have adopted a wildland fire use program, which allows fires that either anthropogenic or natural fires to burn uninhibited with monitoring until they either go out or start to threaten either private lands or any kind of structures. Let's see. Most of the private lands suppress all of their wildfires because they don't want to lose their lands and their timber. And they do this with the help of the state usually. Prescribed fire is common throughout the U.S., primarily in conifer forests and grasslands. And it is used to reduce fuel loading, control woody encroachment, primarily hardwoods, decrease stand density, increase habitat, as site preparation or as restoration, among other things. An implementation of prescribed fire differs on public and private lands depending on the objectives and the resources available. Just wanted to talk a little about how fire actually burns. There's an ignition source, and fire burns in three directions from this ignition source. One is against the wind, which is a backing fire. One is with the wind, which is a head fire. And then there's to the left and right at angles to the wind, which are flanking fires. When conducting a prescribed fire, you will select some kind of fire break to start your fire and put in a black line, which prevents fire from getting into areas that you don't want it in. There's two types of ignition, ground and aerial. There's ground generally has either hand line, which is somebody who just carries a drip torch across the fuels, igniting them, and then there's also vehicle, which some kind of drip torch is mounted onto a vehicle, and then fire is dispensed off of the vehicle. There's also aerial with the delayed aerial ignition device, which is also known as the ping pong device, which drops little ping pong ball, I guess they're little spheres that are have potassium permanganate that are injected with ethylene glycol to make them to create a chemical reaction, so it's a delayed ignition. So once it's ejected out of the helicopter, it will then hit the ground and cause fire. And there's also a helitorch, which is a little more dangerous, and it's basically a torch suspended from a helicopter. Not used very often with private lands management. There are five different firing techniques that can be used, and each one is used with different fuels and different objectives. There's a backing fire, which fire is started at an ignition point and is set into the wind so that fire is moving into the wind. It creates a low intensity fire, and with this picture here, it has plow lines in the middle. They aren't necessary. They just end up costing more. It takes a lot longer, but you can start it from one point and burn all the way through your entire block. This technique is used very commonly in private lands and isn't used very often in public lands because it takes a long time, and generally they're working on larger scales. The strip heading fire starts with a backing fire, and then parallel strips of fire are lit into the wind so that fire burns back into the backing fire. The strips can be adjusted to increase or decrease your intensity of fire. And the intensity usually ranges from medium to high intensity fire depending on the distance between the lines, the wind, and your fuels. This is very common on public lands because it requires minimal resources. It's very cost effective, and you can do very large acreages without a lot of manpower. However, it's fairly uncommon on private lands because the higher intensity fires tend to damage more trees. Next is the flanking fire. Again, it started with a heading fire, and you ignite at right angles to the wind. This is the most difficult of the firing techniques because it requires a considerable knowledge of fire behavior. It's generally used in combination with the other techniques, and usually just for boundaries on both public and private lands. The point source starts with the backing fire again, is ignited in a grid pattern moving along, moving away from the backing fire, and creates medium intensity fire. You can increase and decrease your intensity by altering the width between the points and the rows. And this is most often used on public lands because you can cover very large acreages. And this is kind of an example of how you would want to lay out a grid of how to burn. This is pretty uncommon on private lands just because, one, you're not dealing with such large acreages, and two, most of them can't afford to hire a helicopter and light fire from a helicopter. And the last one is the center and ring, in which a backfire is lit, and then one person comes around with a flanking fire, another person sets the center, and then meets the other person in the middle where the fire or where the wind direction is coming from, so it creates a head fire. This is the highest intensity of all the fires, and it's usually used in grasslands and in small scales. It's very common on public, on private lands, but not very common on public lands because it's usually made, or it's usually used in smaller scales. Comparing spatial scales on public and private lands, fire management differs and the firing technique differs depending on the scale. Public lands have managed larger acreages, and therefore their burn units are much larger, usually over 100 acres. Most of them average 500 or more acres. The fire management plans are generally range in complexity, and it depends on the size, limitations, and goals. Usually the public lands will have more firing technique opportunities because they have more resources versus public or private lands. I hope I said that right. Versus private lands that are working on smaller scales, generally from less than an acre to maybe 50 acres, and they have much more limited resources, and they're more concerned about their current rotation of timber rather than the long-term objectives of perpetuation of the ecosystem. Vegetation responses. Small scale units burn differently than large scale units and have different fire effects and vegetation responses depending on the small scale arrangement versus the large scale arrangement in the techniques. Firing techniques will alter your intensity, species composition, and continuity of the burn, but all of them are influenced by the scale. And the scale will determine whether or not it's even feasible to burn on this acreage, the amount of total acreage that may be influenced by some kind of edge effect, and it will also alter species arrangement. So to sum it up, small-scale units are not the same as large-scale units and should be managed differently. Fire management plans should factor in scale and technique when deciding on what the best management plan for a particular property is. However, little work has been done on small-scale acreages and pyrex systems. Considering private non-industrial landowners, considering the size of acreage for private non-industrial landowners is shrinking, we really need more research on small-scale effects of in fire management. And there has been a paradigm shift in fire management. Fire managers are tending to want to do more prescribed fire to prevent wildfire, but very little has been done in small-scale management. So that's it. Any questions?
All right. We have about 5 minutes for questions.
Dr. Buckley?
Becky, you talked about ownership and scale and those kinds of effects. Do you throw landforms in there as well as an important determinant of what you get with fire and what kind you can use and so on?
You are asking?
Like mountainside versus, flat areas and that sort of thing. How do those sort out from that?
Yeah. I was just looking at scale and technique. Dr. Buckley was asking how landform and topography factors into this. The answer is yes. Depending on your landform and topography, you're going to alter your firing technique, and depending on the scale of your acreage, that will also factor in there. Does that answer your question?
I kind of always teach that, and I was just curious if you think that's as big a factor too as the other factors that you're talking about.
Yes, it is as big a factor. But it also depends on where you are in the country.
Politically, or you mean on federal land, or political boundaries, or tradition?
I probably shouldn't go there. He was, Dr. Buckley had asked about if it also politically factors in, and I'm going to plead the fifth on that one. But the answer's probably yes. Any questions? Dr. Ostermeyer?
In terms of NLPF lands, I assume that, you know, with the trend towards smaller and smaller acreages, that getting burn permits may be an issue. And I was, did you look at that at all, at what's involved and who they have to, do they get a burn permit? Like if I've got, you know, how's that done? Do you know, just curious about that whole issue. It seems like, it, you know, it's coming, but there are other issues there, air quality
right.
and so forth and so on.
His question was, with the smaller acreages, is there going to be more of an increase in problems trying to get burn permits and how to get them? Is that?
Yeah.
I imagine yes. I don't know if it's gotten to the point where it's become a problem yet. With more and more development so close to both public lands and forest lands, I imagine it will start becoming more of a problem because people don't want their houses smoked out. You know, you don't want to smoke out nursing homes or anybody else who might have any kind of respiratory problems. So yes, it will become more and more of a problem, but right now it's not really a problem. Dr. Franklin?
I'm wondering how you think of the knowledge the landowner has when putting together a prescribed burning plan would differ between a large-scale and small-scale units.
Yes. Her question was, most private landowners have not gone through most of the training that the federal agencies have gone through. So does their knowledge of fire limit or does their knowledge of fire, is that the limiting factor on the technique that they used? Is that, I'd say yes. I'm not really sure why, besides that they just have not been educated. And they probably, we need more extension programs on how to burn. And I guess most of the landowners who want to burn right now are probably just burning grass fields. They're not necessarily quite up to trying to burn. They don't want to burn down their forest. So they're, and it's the lack of knowledge base is really what it probably boils down to. They don't know how, and nobody's really told them how. Any more questions? Dr. Bueller?
Yeah, Becky, I've got a management question for you. Now, I've got a warm season grass fields, and what do you think the difference might I expect from doing a strip head fire versus just a point source? You know, would I be able to see differences, and what might they be, and what would be like the advantages?
Okay. His question was basically a compare and contrast strip head fire and the point source fire.
Yeah,
on
native grasses.
Your strip head fires will have a higher intensity, although you could probably, if you space your point sources close enough, you'll essentially have a head fire or a strip head fire. So that kind of depends on spacing. Advantages and disadvantages. It's a lot easier to do a strip head fire. I'm not really sure how the grasses will respond. I guess it depends on the relative humidity, the species involved. Let's see, what else is there? What's surrounding the fields and stuff like that. Is that, I don't know that much about native warm season grasses, so I don't want to get myself in trouble there. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
Questions? All right.
Thank you.